This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch.
With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination.
And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app.
All right, Mark DeRosa's down in Florida. Why do I think Zach Robinson is twirling his mustache? I think DeRosa's old enough to remember, oh, look at me, I'm doing things.
He's now the villainous Zach Robinson?
Well, no, he's just twirling his mustache saying, I've got something else for you.
Mark DeRosa does join us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line from the MLB Network. But, Mark, you're a football fan. You played quarterback in the Ivy League as well. And I know you want to weigh in on everything going on with the Falcons.
I think it guarantees you the playoffs if he stays healthy, no?
Yes.
It does. It does. And I like the Mooney pickup too. Listen, what you had a couple options. You can run Ritter back out there and you kind of knew what you were going to get. You could trade up to that two or three spot and give up the farm to try and get a Jaden Daniels, kind of reset everything. Or you could guarantee yourself a potential division title and into the postseason. So I love the move.
Here's the other thing. Kirk Cousins doesn't believe he's playing for 2 years. Like, you're not going to go up to a 35-year-old guy and go, hey, you ready to hang it up at 37? This guy thinks he's going to see the whole contract.
Well, I just think you got pieces around him, Chris. Bijan and Algier, and hopefully Pitts shows up, right? Pitts was a top-10 pick, but we haven't really seen do much in an Atlanta Falcon uniform. Maybe he gets more utilized with Kirk Cousins.
Well, you played the position, too, Mark. Yeah. And these guys, if you're a leader of that position – and he seems like he is. These guys are going to play harder and respond to you day in, day out.
And you got a chance to win. That's the other attitude that you have driving into the building every day, right?
I think it's a chance to win, and he's going to demand that people know their jobs, and he's going to be able to distribute the ball properly. I think that at the end of the day, he's going to run the offense seamlessly. He's going to, you know, be a great role model for these guys to watch and somebody that they can look up to, and they're going to play hard for him. So I think at the end of the day, it was the right move.
Do you agree the most important group now on this team is the offensive line? Because it's not just about the Achilles, his knee, his shoulder, his ankle, all the things that you worry about with a guy who might stand there a little bit longer with the football. That's sort of what you have to worry about, is it not?
Well, I think for me, Chris, you know, playing the sport forever and then, you know, switching over to baseball, the offense and defensive line is what wins and loses you the game at the end of the day. And people don't truly realize that or pay attention to it. But the guys who play those premium positions understand that if Kirk Cousins doesn't have time to take a 5-step drop and go through his progression, then none of the plays are going to work. I don't care who's out there.
Was there a guy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Was there a guy at Penn when you were there at any point who was more talented than you, but you won the huddle, you won the room, the coaches knew that you were supposed to be the starter?
No.
You at the ballpark? What's going on?
No, I'm at the ballpark.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
30 clubs, 15 days. We did the Marlins today. We got the Nats tomorrow. They're doing a national anthem behind us. I'm going to hang out and watch the Houston Astros play a couple innings against the Marlins. And then check it out. I love getting in these camps and getting a chance to really see. Like, everybody's so optimistic. But then when you kind of look at these guys coming out of the clubhouse, you're like, how is this NL East going to really deviate from the Atlanta Braves and Philadelphia Phillies?
Well, we talked about Spencer Strider earlier, and it's spring training, so take it for what it's worth. But that off-speed stuff, it doesn't seem fair thus far.
I think I'm going to predict him to win the NL Cy Young. It's just trending that way. I mean, just putting so not a lot of stress on his arm to just manufacture 100 miles an hour. And we saw last year when he started to incorporate some off speed. I mean, these guys look foolish at the plate. So he's probably going to be my pick to win it.
All right. Not a fair question with Garrett Cole's MRI yesterday. But if I would have asked you on Sunday, I'm going to put them all on a playground. You get to pick any pitcher in baseball. Would you have taken somebody before Strider?
I would have took Cole.
Okay.
I think, before the injury, I would say he's – and I'm shocked. perfect mechanics, a guy who's relentless in his craft. It just goes to show you, you never know, right? How many bullets do you have in that right arm, even with perfect stuff that he's able to do?
All right, I want to go back. Was there never a guy at Penn who was more talented than you that, like, at that position, I think coaches might give up.
It was one double A, no.
So there was nobody more talented than you that was an option walking through the door.
I think you're insulting Mark DeRosa a little bit.
Yeah, no chance, Chris. I'm sorry. There was not, no. I redshirted my freshman year because there was a senior that was deserving of playing and super talented. But once he left, no. I kind of knew coming into my sophomore year I was going to be a starter.
Why don't I know this? Who else recruited you? You obviously went for the education and being able to play both sports, but who else recruited you for football?
Yeah, I mean, it was always you have to pick one, and I didn't want to pick one yet. My dad didn't want me to give up baseball. So, like, the rub was always go to Rutgers, see if you could be the one guy from Jersey that kind of changes it. Mm-hmm. And so I had a scholarship to go to Rutgers and play quarterback there, but they were not willing to let me play baseball, and I just was not going to do that. So I thought the Ivy League encased, gave me the most options if the sports didn't work out.
What did you major in?
I was in the Wharton School of Business with a major in finance and marketing.
You're making a face over there, Domino. It's an Ivy League school.
No, I didn't.
You're not going to major in phys ed.
Hold on. You were a Wharton. I know the Wharton School of Business. That's why I never knew this.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you, long story short, Al Bagnoli was the coach at Penn. And I had visions of going and playing at Arizona State or Stanford or something like that, UCLA, going West Coast and being the next Troy Aikman, right? And my dad's like, 6'1 with no mobility. I don't think you're really going to be the next Troy Aikman or do anything fancy. And when Al Bagnoli, the University of Pennsylvania coach, came into the house, he said, I can guarantee you a spot in the Wharton School of Business. I had no idea what that meant. But when he walked out the door, my dad looked at me. He goes, we got to remortgage the house because that's where you got to go.
Right. Because why would your dad know about the Wharton School of Business? Because I'm telling you, I know like what that is and what it takes to actually be a student in that world.
Yeah, he was just well aware of it at the time. And when I looked at a few of them, the Dartmouths, Cornell, stuff like that, as the 1AA started to trickle in. And he was just like, Mark, who's to say? I mean, the percentage of you going to the big leagues or playing in the NFL is so slim. But the network and the people that you're going to meet, you can't help but be successful. And he wasn't lying. I lived with 7 football players in an 8-bedroom off-campus house. And to this day, all those 7 guys are pretty super successful in their own right.
All right, I'm going to ask this because I'm not saying what you did, certainly as a professional baseball player, what you do now is not something. But has there ever been a moment when you thought, am I ever going to use what I learned at Wharton? And what day is it going to be?
Yes.
Like standing there with Robert Flores doesn't seem very Wharton School of Business to me.
No offense to Robert Flores.
I just kept telling myself, keep putting yourself in uncomfortable situations and see if you can get out of them. It's really like what it came down to. And now I feel comfortable, you know, in the uncomfortable spot. So I knew I was overmatched. The beauty of that school was I had never seen people compete in a classroom. And you know, sitting there watching these kids, that was their athletic field. That was their football field. That was their baseball diamond. They came into that class ready to go and ready to make a difference, and I was hanging on for dear life.
You do know that you would be a prime candidate for a front office. When you go, and I'm not putting your business on the street, but you go talk to a major league team about a manager's job, does the Wharton School of Business come up?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, because those are businessmen, I'm assuming, who own those teams.
Yeah, I don't. You know, Chris, the interviews I've done, listen, I'm in a different spot than a lot of guys that try and get these jobs, right? I'm happy. I played in the big leagues for a while, financially secure. I've done some things that, you know, I can go in there and truly be myself. Mm-hmm. And I think in some of these spots, it maybe scares some people off in certain instances where I'm going to speak my opinion. I think there's moments where the GMs of today are really wanting to put their fingerprint on the entire game and basically managing it from the booth. And sometimes I think maybe a guy like myself would
be a little pushback for him.
Well, how unique is it here, what's going on with a guy like Brian Snicker and Alex Anthopoulos in that regard?
Alex Anthopoulos is one of the best GMs I ever played for in Toronto, because I always felt that he was searching for that edge on the margins as far as how do I create culture? How do I create chemistry? My last day in 2013 in Toronto, he called me in the office to tell me he was going to pick up my option for 2014. And I said, hey, listen, it's over for me. Like, I know it's over. It's time to go home. So I appreciate it. And he asked my opinion on what I felt was important, what I felt was important to the clubhouse. And he asks everyone's opinion and takes everybody's opinion player-wise into consideration. And I think that's something that's kind of should be applauded. This, especially, the kind of class player that the Atlanta Braves have. I want to know what Austin Riley's thinking and Matt Olson's thinking and Spencer Strider and Max Fried. I mean, these are guys that are grinding to win another World Series.
And there's a good chance that Turd isn't walking through the door to upset that or give us less of a chance to win. Yeah.
I think he just thought earlier in his career, if I amass talent, I can win. And that's not the case. Yeah, you want talent, but there's a rhyme and reason as to why Chris Sale walks in that door.
I'm going to ask about Bruce Bochy in a second, but I know how much you respect the manager's job, and the manager's job has changed, and you're around the game enough to know that, like you just talked about, relationships with GMs. But have I been, or has Nick and I, or anybody maybe been selling you short, and not that selling you short becoming a manager is not a thing, but is there a chance that you'd be better suited for the front office as opposed to maybe sitting on the bench every night?
I mean, ultimately, like, that's what I passionately love to do. Kind of constructing and putting teams together and trying to create culture and understanding, like, even today at the Marlins camp, like, seeing Tim Anderson and Luis Arraez work the double play and look at them coming together. Tim Anderson is a guy who's motivated and looking for a chance. And you could just see, like, a lot of teams were probably shied away from him because of his past history. But I saw a guy today, after having him with Team USA, that was maybe a little misjudged and put a little bit on his own plate as a young player. But I see a guy motivated to compete, so...
All right.
That's the kind of stuff, GM-wise, like, if you insert that type of personality into my clubhouse, what does it do? I think playing on 8 different teams, I had a pretty decent feel of
all
that.
Right. I think I saw you on TV this morning. Have you slimmed down a little bit?
You know, I'm going to be honest with your listeners. After 25 years, my wife turned to me and said, I'd like you to stop chewing tobacco. 25 years. And I quit. And normally everybody gains weight, but I've been waking up in cold sweats for the last 2 weeks. So yes, I have lost.
Going through withdrawal is Mark DeRosa.
Now, are you pleasant? Are you
Nick?
Are you pleasant to be? Are you pleasant to be around, or is it going to take a little bit longer?
Yeah, I'm all right. Okay. It was time.
Okay. So here's my other question, though. I sort of got the gist that this morning that perhaps the accommodations that the MLB Network is putting
you in. Oh, my God.
Okay. So that's a yes. The accommodations might be a little bit, we think maybe should be better if you're, but here's
just say they're different.
I was making a joke, but yeah, I mean, okay. We're making sure that latches. We're double locking the door. There might be a chair up against it.
But here's what I take out of this whole thing. You represented your country. You were almost an American hero. You almost won the World Baseball Classic. How do they do this to you?
I don't know, but we're going to find out. I go up there in about 2 weeks, and I'm going to figure out who's got the hotel list.
Right. Searching for answers in Sea Caucuses, Mark DeRosa.
Are you going to Norma Ray? Are you going to rally everybody around and make sure that this is going to get better from here on out?
Well, I just feel if you want people to perform at the top level, You gotta treat them a little better.
Starts at the top. Mark DeRosa, MLB Network with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. So obviously over the past couple of years, we've had the conversation. How do you adjust to having that week off? The Braves tried everything. It doesn't work. What's Mark DeRosa's pitch as far as adjusting?
Nick, I literally, I have sat and thought about this and put pen to paper. I don't know if it's you add two more teams to the playoffs and do like a wild card day, like a crazy wild card all day where there's four wild card games, and then those teams have to immediately go play the division winner. So you'd only get like one or two days off. I also think it could be a little overblown, like talking to some other guys in some other camps. I don't want to say that would be considered an excuse, but at the same time, because I don't think it is, to be honest with you. I don't want to sit for 5 days either. I remember when we used to clinch the divisions when I was a young player with the Braves, and you're working out, and it's not the same, and it's just like the All-Star break. It's not a matter of getting your body in shape. You want the days off physically and mentally. The problem is you can't – it's like the calibration of the way your mind picks up the fastball – when you sit for 4 or 5 days, it just takes a minute.
By that time,
you're down 1-0 in the division series and panic.
Can I make a suggestion? What if the teams that got the byes actually played a baseball game?
What if they played against each other, like an exhibition game?
Yeah.
I'm telling you this right now. If it doesn't mean anything, like, for example, what the Braves were trying to do last year, it sounds good in theory, but any big leaguer who's ever played a sim game on a backfield or played against guys in the same uniform, it just doesn't. You just can't get the juices flowing the way you can with when you know it's on the line and you know the whole world's watching. I don't know any other way, like, I can't tell you. I went 0-for-9 million on the backfields against our pitchers over the years with the Braves. But then you put another uniform in that box and you start competing. It just changes everything.
Did this team need more?
Yeah, they do have to adjust it.
And speaking of adjusting, did this team need more attitude over the past couple of years? And is Chris Sale going to provide that attitude if it's needed?
I think so. I also think he's got a ton of respect for what the Braves have done. So I don't think he's going to walk in and think he needs to be this huge vocal leader for this team. I think the proof's in the pudding in that room. So I think he gives them a little bit of an edge starting rotation-wise that they need. But I certainly think that there's enough in – I think they're the best team in baseball. I get it what the Dodgers did, but I think up and down the line the Braves have the best roster, starters, bullpen, lineup, defense, everything that goes in.
Can you imagine being as good as Mookie Betts, where you could literally play three positions and be the best in your organization?
No, Chris, I don't like it.
You don't?
I don't like it. I mean, I came up as a shortstop. I know what that position entails. You're asking an awful lot of him. I know he can do it, and I know he could be great at it, but I need Mookie to be one of the best hitters in the sport. And I just worry that you put a little bit more on his plate to think about.
Good. I hope it screws him up completely. tell me about watching Bochy last year win a World Series.
Yeah, I think if you really, really dove in on the World Series and watched every game, Torrey Lovello, who's a great guy and a great buddy, managed it very analytically. You kind of knew the lanes where he was going to bring certain relievers in for certain lanes in their lineup, and he was going to play it by the book. And not saying there's anything wrong with that, but when you looked over at the Texas Rangers, Bochy was doing it the way he wanted to do it. He was riding hot hands. Chapman didn't see the ball. No one knew Leclerc had a sore arm in game. When was the last game when he let Spores go out there and close it out 2 innings? He's got a feel for the moment that can't be understated. He just has a feel for watching hitters and controlling that bullpen. I watched him do it in San Francisco, and he trusts his guys. He trusts his guys. He's willing to go to the press conference and say, I screwed up.
Okay, so finish up with this. Every guy that you played for, every guy that was your manager, give me one trait you would take away from all of them if you were going to do this or even go to the front office.
Oh, my God. Well, Bobby Cox was brutal truth, because that guy said things to me that would end most players.
So being Italian,
he told me flat to my face, "You're not an everyday guy in this uniform. No way."
All right. Being an Italian from New Jersey, does that help you, or do you have to get the hell out of the room quickly? Yeah, it does.
No, that reminded me of Sunday dinner at Grandpa's house.
Just another weekend.
Brutal truth, man. Yeah. That's what I wanted.
All right, so give me another manager.
I knew where I stood.
Give me another manager in a trade.
Buck Showalter, ultra prepared. Tony La Russa, maniacal about winning the day. Who else did I have Bochy. The opposite? John. Well, Boch to me was the embodiment of all of it. He had the feel to know when to kick you in the ass or to put his arm around you. Better than any manager I ever played.
Gibbons.
He knew when to call a meeting, when not to. All of it.
Gibbons.
I absolutely love Gibby because I caught him at the right time in my career. I was a veteran who, again, kind of from the Bobby trait, like brutal truth was going to let his players decide whether we won or lost. That
it's like an
he
award.
Didn't think he was going to jump it.
It's like an award ceremony. We're playing you off because Tech basketball is coming up. We have a hard out. That's term, Mark.
Enjoy the Marlins.
Mark, right. We appreciate the time. We'll talk soon. As Chris said, yeah, go scout some things.
See you, boys.
Go check it out. Mark DeRosa with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app.
A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation. Like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
So, Robert, I want to thank you for your time. I just don't think you're the right person for this position.
I don't understand. Was it something I said?
Well, we did a background check on you and found some things of concern.
If you're in charge of hiring for your company, you know how helpful a background screening can be. That's why companies that use Horizon Background Screening make smarter hiring decisions. Don't let the wrong hire put your company at risk. Get the real story on your candidates at horizonscreening.com. Horizonscreening.com.